Johnson was saying there has to be decorum here. We have to maintain decorum. And ultimately, the congressman was escorted out of the chamber. But throughout the speech, which was quite lengthy, well over an hour and a half there, Democrats were holding up signs that said false as the president was making claims about what he has done or what the Biden administration had done. Others had signs or whiteboards that said that's a lie. Alex, I think it was also striking how few bipartisan moments there actually were. And I don't think President Trump was coming into this to try to create that. He did implore the Democrats at one point to please stand. Please, is there something I can say to you that could get you on your feet to applaud? But it wasn't anything he delivered in his remarks tonight. The only thing that came close to a bipartisan moment was applause for the family of Corey Comprator, who was killed at the president's rally in Butler, Pennsylvania last summer. That was it. It was the only thing that got many Democrats on their feet. Certainly was not policy comments from the president throughout this speech. You mentioned tariffs. I think that's the policy headline from this. A lot of what he talked about was what he mentioned on, or what he would say on the campaign trail that he was going to do when he was elected. He went through great detail of what he has done since taking office 43 days ago. But the tariffs point is very important because this is the big story right now, these major tariffs that he has put on Canada and Mexico, and the president acknowledging tonight that there will be what he calls a little disturbance. That means he is acknowledging that Americans are likely to feel the negative effects of this because economic experts are saying there will be a trickle down. American consumers are going to feel this as importers pass down the costs to American consumers. But the president said tonight, we're okay with that. It won't be much. Alex, that's a phrase he keeps using, short-term disturbance, a little disturbance, but he says it's going to be okay. These are going to be words we're going to hold him to over the next couple of weeks and months as we see the ramifications of these major trade moves he's been making against key countries like Canada and Mexico.
Words to Americans that they are going to feel it in some way. Much there about ending DEI, about crackdown to the border, about renaming the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America, making English the official language, two genders, a male and female, and then again a lot on tariffs there. The president signing autographs, members of Congress who are back in that aisle as he makes his way out right now. ABC News national correspondent Stephen Portnoy. Stephen, what stuck out to you?
Well, look, this is going to be remembered as a historic speech for a number of reasons. The longest address, it seems, given by a president to a joint session of Congress, beating Bill Clinton's record from the 1990s. This was an hour and 40 minutes. There were the outbursts, the first, to my mind, the first ever removal of a member of Congress for causing a disruption during a presidential address. And you had, look, this was as objectively as I can in this analysis, it was a divisive speech. People who are fans of the president will come away from this saying that they thought that what the president had to say was as strong a message as they've ever heard delivered in the House chamber. And those who are disinclined to like the president will think that it was some of the most repulsive remarks that they've ever heard from a president. And you saw this demonstrated on the floor, with the Republicans bounding to their feet at every applause line and Democrats sitting on their hands. Karen explained how some of them walked out on the president. Congressman Green from Texas, who initiated the disruption early on and shook his cane at the president, told our Jay O'Brien afterwards that he is now prepping articles of impeachment that will go nowhere in this Republican-controlled House. And he says he's willing to suffer whatever punishment may fall upon him. The House Speaker earlier today warned members of the House not to cause disruptions, and the House Freedom Caucus put out a statement saying that they would move to censure any member of the House who would cause a disruption. So let's see what happens with respect to Texas Congressman Al Green. On the whole, you had the president saying, as Karen mentioned, that there's absolutely nothing he could have said or done to make Democrats happy or stand or smile or applaud. He called Joe Biden the worst president in history. He said the CHIPS Act, supported by two dozen House Republicans in the last Congress, was a horrible, horrible thing. He wants it repealed, though the Republicans who voted for it do not want to see that happen. And he urged Republicans in the House to support the big, beautiful bill that he is hoping will see to the extension and expansion of his tax cuts. He threatened House Republicans who don't get behind it. He said, I don't believe the people will ever vote you into office. And he says he's doing them a big favor by letting them know that. The president has just now left the House chamber, Alex, and the joint session is formally dissolved. But I'll tell you, as we've been speaking, the Democratic side of the chamber has been empty. Democrats raced for the exits, those who remained to hear the rest of the president's remarks.
Yeah, some of them for the exits long before he was done. And now in about 5 minutes, we're going to hear from Democrats and the Democratic response. Senator Alyssa Slotkin from Michigan, she will be giving that response in a few minutes from now. We'll bring that to you live. ABC News political analyst Steve Roberts. Steve, your reaction to what you heard tonight?
Well, I agree with my colleagues. This was an exceptionally divisive speech. The president didn't even try to reach out across the aisle. He made one brief remark, but this was very emblematic of the way he's always governed. He, you know, after his wounding at Butler, Republicans put out the word that at the National Convention he would try to stress national unity. He did it for about 5 minutes and then quickly devolved into his standard campaign speech where he blames the Democrats for all the ills of the world. So they sat on their hands, but in fact, he had no interest in reaching out his hand to them either. A couple of quick things, though. He talked about balancing the budget, but the fact is he's ignoring economic reality. If he also said he wanted to make permanent the tax cuts that he passed during his first term. They would cost $4 trillion, that's a T, $4 trillion to the Treasury in lost income if those tax cuts are made permanent. So the goal of balancing the budget and making his tax cuts permanent are a totally contradictory idea, a contradiction which he never really resolved. And also he was talking about how optimistic America is and how excited people are. And yes, I do think it's certainly true that his core base of supporters are very happy. But the stock markets are not very happy at all. And all his talk about the economic revival and the excitement and growth in America, today the stock market dropped 670 points. And that was a reflection of a growing pessimism on the part of a lot of investors about the impact that tariffs would have and inflation would have. The Federal Reserve is pausing in its campaign to reduce interest rates. In fact, all of the gains made by the stock market since Trump's election have now been wiped out by very negative feelings on the part of Wall Street. So the very rosy picture the president painted is not being shared by a lot of American investors, a lot of American corporations, a lot of American consumers. The two most important guides, the two most important indexes that measure American consumer confidence, one by the Conference Board, one by the University of Michigan, both have dropped sharply in the last couple of weeks as the potential impact of not only of inflation, but of tariff cuts have really dampened the enthusiasm of American consumers. So the economic facts are a little different than the rosy picture he painted tonight, Alex.
Yeah, on the tariffs, Steve, he said tonight, they're going to hurt, but hang in there, stick with me. Are Americans going to stick with them?
Well, so far the answer is no, at least in terms of the people who are making bets on Wall Street. Now, let's be clear. There are is a great wave of support for Donald Trump. He did win the election, and he is continues to be very popular in his core base of support. But, you know, in addition to that, is the issue of inflation. He tried to keep blaming Joe Biden and kept talking about the mess he inherited. But the fact is, bad economy than they deserve, and more credit for a good one than they deserve, because presidents have very few tools to really make an impact on inflation. And Donald Trump knows darn well that sooner and later, the persistent problem of inflation, whether it's the price of gasoline, the price of eggs, the price of groceries, he's going to start inheriting some of the blame for that. CNN poll found 62% of Americans say, and that includes a lot of Republicans who voted for him, 62% of Americans want him to do more about controlling inflation. So you can only blame your predecessor for so long. Sooner or later, you have to inherit responsibility for the economy. And in the end, I think that's going to be the single biggest question of how successful this presidency is, whether he can, in fact, turn the corner on inflation and restore American confidence, or will he be shackled by the same kind of negative feelings that helped sink the Biden administration, Alex?
There were those raucous moments at the beginning. I want to take you back to the moment the Texas Democrat, well, hang on one second. First, the Democrats look like that they are ready to respond right now. Senator Alyssa Slotkin from Wyandotte, Michigan. Here she is.
I'm honored to have the opportunity to speak tonight. It's late, so I promise to be a lot shorter than what you just watched. I won't take it personally if you've never heard of me. I'm the new senator from the great state of Michigan, where I grew up. I've been in public service my entire life because I happened to be in New York City on 9/11 when the Twin Towers came down. Before the smoke cleared, I knew I wanted to make a life in national security. I was recruited by the CIA and did 3 tours in Iraq alongside the military. In between, I worked at the White House under President Bush and President Obama, 2 very different leaders who both believed that America is exceptional. You can find that same sense of patriotism here in Wyandotte, Michigan, where I'm speaking from tonight. It's a working-class town just south of Detroit. President Trump and I both won here in November. It might not seem like it, but plenty of places like this still exist across the United States. Places where people believe that if you work hard and play by the rules, you should do well and your kids should do better. It reminds me of how I grew up. My dad was a lifelong Republican, my mom a lifelong Democrat. But it was never a big deal because we had shared values that were bigger than any one party. We just went through another fraught election season. Americans made it clear that prices are too high and that the government needs to be more responsive to their needs. America wants change, but there's a responsible way to make change and a reckless way. And we can make that change without forgetting who we are as a country and as a democracy. So that's what I'm going to lay out tonight. Because whether you're from Wyandotte or Wichita, most Americans share 3 core beliefs: that the middle class is the engine of our country, that strong national security protects us from harm, and that our democracy, no matter how messy, is unparalleled and worth fighting for. Let's start with the economy. Michigan literally invented the middle class, the revolutionary idea that you could work at an auto plant and afford the car you were building. That's the American dream. And in order to expand and protect the middle class, we have to do a few basic things. We need to bring down the price of things we spend the most money on: groceries, housing, healthcare. We need to make more things in America with good paying union jobs and bring our supply chains back home from places like China. We need to give American businesses the certainty they need to invest and create the jobs of the future. And we need a tax system that's fair for people who don't happen to make $1 billion. Look, the president talked a big game on the economy, but it's always important to read the fine print. So, do his plans actually help Americans get ahead? Not even close. President Trump is trying to deliver an unprecedented giveaway to his billionaire friends. He's on the hunt to find trillions of dollars to pass along to the wealthiest in America. And to do that, he's going to make you pay in every part of your life. Grocery and home prices are going up, not down, and he hasn't laid out a credible plan to deal with either of those. His tariffs on allies like Canada will raise prices on energy, lumber, and cars, and start a trade war that will hurt manufacturing and farmers. Your premiums and prescriptions will cost more because the math on his proposals doesn't work without going after your health care. Meanwhile, for those keeping score, the national debt is going up, not down. And if he's not careful, he could walk us right into a recession. And one more thing. In order to pay for his plan, he could very well come after your retirement, the Social Security, Medicare, and VA benefits you worked your whole life to earn. The president claims he won't, but Elon Musk just called Social Security the biggest Ponzi scheme of all time. While we're on the subject of Elon Musk, is there anyone in America who is comfortable with him and his gang of 20-year-olds using their own computer servers to poke through your tax returns, your health information, and your bank accounts? No oversight, no protections against cyber attack, no guardrails on what they do with your private data. We need a more efficient government. You want to cut waste? I'll help you do it. But change doesn't need to be chaotic or make us less safe. The mindless firing of people who work to protect our nuclear weapons, keep our planes from crashing, and conduct the research that finds the cure for cancer only to rehire them 2 days later? No CEO in America could do that without being summarily fired. Okay, so we've talked about economic security. How about national security? Let's start with the border. As someone who spent my whole career protecting our homeland, every country deserves to know who and what is coming across its border, period. Democrats and Republicans should all be for that. But securing the border without actually fixing our broken immigration system is dealing with the symptom and not the disease. America is a nation of immigrants. We need a functional system keyed to the needs of our economy that allows vetted people to come and work here legally. So I look forward to the president's plan on that. Because here's the thing. Today's world is deeply interconnected. Migration, cyber threats, AI, environmental destruction, terrorism. One nation cannot face these issues alone. We need friends in all corners, and our safety depends on it. President Trump loves to say peace through strength. That's actually a line he stole from Ronald Reagan. But let me tell you, after the spectacle that just took place in the Oval Office last week, Reagan must be rolling in his grave. We all want an end to the war in Ukraine, but Reagan understood that true strength required America to combine our military and economic might with moral clarity. And that scene in the Oval Office wasn't just a bad episode of reality TV. It summed up Trump's whole approach to the world. He believes in cozying up to dictators like Vladimir Putin and kicking our friends like the Canadians in the teeth. He sees American leadership as merely a series of real estate transactions. As a Cold War kid, I'm thankful it was Reagan and not Trump in office in the 1980s. Trump would have lost us the Cold War. Donald Trump's actions suggest that in his heart, he doesn't believe we're an exceptional nation. He clearly doesn't think we should lead the world. Look, America is not perfect, but I stand with the majority of Americans who believe we are still exceptional, unparalleled. And I would rather have American leadership over Chinese or Russian leadership any day of the week. Because for generations, America has offered something better. Our security and our prosperity, yes, but our democracy, our very system of government, has been the aspiration of the world. And right now, it's at risk. It's at risk when the president decides you can pick and choose what rules you want to follow, when he ignores court orders and the Constitution itself, or when elected leaders stand by and just let it happen. But it's also at risk when the president pits Americans against each other, when he demonizes those who are different and tells certain people they shouldn't be included. Because America is not just a patch of land between two oceans. We are more than that. Generations have fought and died to secure the fundamental rights that define us. Those rights and the fight for them make us who we are. We're a nation of strivers, risk takers, innovators, and we are never satisfied. That is America's superpower. And look, I've lived and worked in many countries. I've seen democracies flicker out. I've seen what life is like when a government is rigged. You can't open a business without paying off a corrupt official. You can't criticize the guys in charge without getting a knock at the door in the middle of the night. So as much as we need to make our government more responsive to our lives today, don't for one moment fool yourself that democracy isn't precious and worth saving. But how do we actually do that? I know a lot of you have been asking that question. First, don't tune out. It's easy to be exhausted, but America needs you now more than ever. If previous generations had not fought for this democracy, where would we be today? Second, hold your elected officials, including me, accountable. Watch how they're voting. Go to town halls and demand they take action. That's as American as apple pie. Third, organize. Pick just one issue you're passionate about and engage. And doom scrolling doesn't count. Join a group that cares about your issue and act. And if you can't find one, start one. Some of the most important movements in our history have come from the bottle up. In closing, we all know that our country is going through something right now. We're not sure what the next day is going to hold, let alone the next decade. But this isn't the first time we've experienced significant and tumultuous change as a country. I'm a student of history, and we've gone through periods of political instability before. And ultimately, we've chosen to keep changing this country for the better. But every single time, we've only gotten through those moments because of two things: engaged citizens and principled leaders. Engaged citizens who do a little bit more than they're used to doing to fight for the things that they care about, and principled leaders who are ready to receive the ball and do something about it. So thank you tonight for caring about your country. Just by watching, you qualify as engaged citizens. And I promise that I and my fellow Democrats will do everything in our power to be the principled leaders that you deserve. Good night, everyone.
Democratic Senator Alyssa Slotkin giving the Democratic response there. President Trump already back in the White House. He walked in moments ago. She touched on Ukraine, and tonight the president talked about putting an end to the war and the money the U.S. is sending there. ABC News White House correspondent Karen Travers, was there any real news in what he had to say tonight?
In the president?
When it comes to Ukraine, yeah.
You know, he said that he received a letter today from President Zelensky, and that in the letter, President Zelensky said that Ukraine is ready to come to the negotiating table as soon as possible to bring lasting peace closer. He said that Zelensky said nobody wants peace more than the Ukrainians, and that his team is ready to work under President Trump's strong leadership to get a peace that lasts. Alex, the president of Ukraine had also put out a statement today echoing many of those same themes, talking about the president's strong leadership, saying they value how much America has done. And Zelensky in that statement said, it is time to make things right, referencing what had happened in the Oval Office last week, that very combative, contentious moment between the president, Zelensky, and Vice President Vance. He didn't apologize to President Trump, which is something White House officials had wanted to see before the president would engage again with Zelensky, but the Ukrainian president certainly acknowledging that they need to fix things and get things back on track. And Alex, I think that was exactly what President Trump wanted to hear, because he wanted to talk about it tonight and say, you know, look, essentially that they're groveling and that they're reaching out to us and we can move things forward. The president also said he's had serious discussions with Russia and has received strong signals that they're ready for peace. The president said, wouldn't that be beautiful?
And Zelensky's been all over social media today saying thank you, thank you, thank you over and over again. Stephen Portnoy, no real attempt tonight to get Democrats on his side, but he's going to need them to avoid a shutdown pretty quickly.
We are 10 days to the hour from the moment where government funding for the agencies will run out. And things being how they are in the Senate, you need bipartisanship to get anything done. So to avoid a filibuster, there's going to have to be, if there's going to be a bill that extends government funding and avoids a shutdown come midnight on March 14th, it's going to have to be a bipartisan bill. By the way, while the president believes he has a mandate, there is unified Republican control of the Congress. It is with the slimmest majority in the House in the modern era. And, you know, there's a very strong likelihood that Speaker Johnson's going to need Democratic help to get a funding bill across the finish line. Already, at least one House Republican said today that he was a no on a short-term stopgap continuing resolution. So the whole point is, the president, if he's going to avoid a shutdown, if he seeks to avoid a shutdown, is going to need bipartisanship. I don't think his speech tonight has done much to foster the culture of bipartisanship in Washington.
And maybe you could argue on the lighter side, although the president didn't seem to see it that way tonight, that message to Greenland saying he thinks that the U.S. will get Greenland at some point, that it's kind of gone from a joke to a real thing. Final thoughts, Steve Roberts, on tonight?
I think one thing to keep your eye on is Ukraine policy, because this is an issue that can really seriously split the Republican Party. There is still a very strong element in the Republican Party that believes in Ronald Reagan's doctrine of peace through strength, that believes in supporting Ukraine, and is very resentful of Trump's courting of Vladimir Putin. And so this is one of the issues out there that could really prove an enormous problem for Donald Trump, because potentially it could really split his party, Alex.
Steve, in a word or two, how is this going to be remembered tonight?
I think it's going to be remembered because for its contentiousness, and I think that that reflects Donald Trump's view of the world. It's red hats against the rest of the world. It's us against them. He spent a lot of time talking about victims, a lot of time talking about grievances, a lot of times talking about his resentments, and that's the way he's rallied the Republican Party for him. This is a speech totally devoid of any attempts to reach across the aisle, Alex.
We'll see where by tomorrow morning what people are talking about. Steve, thank you. Tonight it was, as Karen said, maybe the new normal for what a presidential address will be. It was loud from Democrats yelling, getting kicked out, Republicans chanting USA, USA tonight. The president telling Americans to stick with them on tariffs. They may hurt in the short term. I'm Alex Stone. You've been listening to live coverage from ABC News.
ABC News.
Brings me to our caller, Jesse from Madison. You've got a couple of thoughts about Judge Schimel's lame conclusion that there was no intent in this case. Go ahead, Jesse.
Yeah, so not only did he get the case law obviously wrong, as you mentioned, that intent doesn't even matter. It's worse than that, because his ruling suggests there was no bad intent by the chair of the school board, when his behavior is prima facie evidence that there was bad intent. It's like obvious on the plane of its, and then on, you know, on the nose of your face. And not only that, but this school board chair lied to other elected officials, the other members of the school board, when he said this was a 4-2. So is that some kind of fraudulent activity? I mean, he sent this in some kind of, you know, wired communication, a Zoom. So you've got that going on. But then you have the judge, Mr. Schimel, who not only erroneously ruled on the case law itself, but erroneously said there was no bad intent when there very clearly was, which means Judge Schimel has shown malice against the rule of law.
I couldn't agree with you more, Jesse. And to just add some emphasis to what Jesse from Madison just said, and thank you for the very insightful call and the dropping of a little legalese Latin for all of our listeners today. I love it. Prima facie evidence, meaning evidence that in its first instance, in the most reasonable and obvious interpretation, clearly lend to an inference of bad faith here or bad intent. And that is the fact that A, he used secret communications, B, did so a number of iterations, was actively misreporting the results of same. For a circuit court judge, any judge, to conclude that, oh, I'll just decide that that was good intent, because eventually when he got called out and the open records were requested, that showed that there was no bad intent. Yes, the facts on their face give just an equal, I think, if not more persuasive interpretation that would lend itself to the conclusion that the chair was operating in bad faith. Jeff, what should voters glean from this as they go into the polling places in early voting and on April 1st to decide if this man who can't read basic case law correctly or our statutes correctly should be a Supreme Court justice?
Well, sure. I just want to say at this juncture in our conversation that Law Forward is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization and doesn't take sides in elections. But this is an important case. We see so many TV commercials, right, that tell us, oh, this, they're slinging mud back and forth about who's going to follow the law, who's not going to follow the law. This is a concrete example where common sense and established precedent point in the same direction. And this is an important issue of law that is about our democracy and is about how our government works. And Judge Schimel was once the attorney general of this state, and which means he was in charge of enforcing these transparency laws. This is not something new to him. This is not something where he didn't know. And I think that people should be looking at this and thinking about, what do I learn about how he sees democracy and the law? And what do I learn about how he thinks about precedent based on this case?
I'll tell you what I think. The man can't read case law, can't get it right, and especially, most importantly, when it comes to transparency in government, egads, what hot water we would be in as a state if he is elected to the Supreme Court. My opinion, not my great guest, Jeff Mandels of Law Forward. Can't wait to have you back, Jeff. Many thanks. Up next, we've got County Executive David Crowley talking about the impacts to you and yours from the MAGA cuts to the benefits that we all rely upon. Next on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
A new choice, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, WISS.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Dave Packard. President Trump speaking to Congress this hour in an address that often read like a campaign stump speech. Trump summing up his tumultuous first weeks in office and laying out his plans for the months ahead.
This is a time for big dreams and bold action. Upon taking office, I imposed an immediate freeze on all federal hiring, a freeze on all new federal regulations, and a freeze on all foreign aid.
And Trump warning government workers that haven't been fired that they will be if they disobey.
And any federal bureaucrat who resists this change will be removed from office immediately. Because we are draining the swamp. It's very simple. And the days of rule by unelected bureaucrats are over.
This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Bucks basketball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks in Atlanta to take on the Hawks. Bucks guard Kyle Kuzma dealing with a sprained right ankle after accidentally stepping on the foot of Giannis Antetokounmpo during Saturday's game in Dallas. But Kuzma pleased they've won six of their last seven games.
You know, we're moving in the right direction, and we've had some hiccups. That's to be expected, but you know, I had a coach in the past. He's always said that the regular season is just rehearsal for the playoffs. That's just the approach that we kind of have to have, and obviously so you want to win, and every game is going to have a different challenge.
Baseball, the Brewers losing to the Reds 5-4 in Cactus League action. Left-hander Aaron Ashby had to leave the game with apparently a strained oblique muscle. The Brewers have signed veteran lefty Jose Quintana to a one-year deal. NFL, the Packers agreeing to a two-year deal with linebacker Isaiah McDuffie, worth around $9 million with incentives. McDuffie, a sixth-round pick for Green Bay 5 years ago. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Kieran Culkin is now an Oscar winner, having won the award for Best Supporting Actor last Sunday night. However, if Culkin had his way, someone else would have won. Just 2 weeks before the film written by Jesse Eisenberg was to start shooting, Culkin said he almost quit because the last season of Succession went on longer than anticipated and he wanted to spend time with his family. Culkin also won the Golden Globe and Screen Actors Guild Award for his performance. Being a good dad only goes so far. Speaking of the Culkins, Kieran Culkin has come a long way from playing Fuller McAllister in Home Alone alongside his brother Macaulay. Macaulay attended after parties with his wife Brenda and said he knew his younger brother was going to win because of where they sat him in proximity to the stage. The older Culkin was asked if he would see his brother later that night, and his response was, "I'm not sure. He's a busy guy." He's now Academy Award-winning actor Kieran Culkin. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Areas of rain tonight and a little breezy. An inch or two of rain likely. Temps fall from the 40s to 30s. For tomorrow, rain mixing with and eventually changing to snow. Temps fall out of the 30s into the 20s, and it will be windy. An inch or two of slush.
It's 39 right now.
Matt Nair on air.
A lot of federal employees got this fork in the road letter.
You can stay, but you're not really guaranteed anything.
Luann's husband is a Vietnam veteran.
I wrote a letter to President Musk. My husband put his life on the line for our country.
Wow.
You are putting my husband's life on the line right now by cutting all those programs that are keeping him alive at the VA. Please call your legislators and tell them to stand up. This is not what America is.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Allbush Show.
Trump and Vance verbally assaulted the president of Ukraine, an ally of the U.S. Trump defending the president of Russia, a known dictator. This is a complete capitulation to our sworn enemies. And it's time for Republicans, my former party that I left in 2011, to speak the hell up. Because if we don't, it's not going to be long before we don't have anything left to defend.
The Todd Allbush Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, 25% tariffs against Mexico and Canada are in place. What does that mean for us at the grocery store? Darren Von Ruden joins us. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on air. Weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
could use a beautiful day and some sun beating down and the radio on and each and every one of you. But instead, we've got a Trump quasi-State of the Union. Thank goodness we've got my very special next guest to join us to help us make sense of it all. It is Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley joining us from the Longworth Building in the halls of Congress. Welcome back to the show, David. Thanks for making time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Maggie. It's always a pleasure to be on with you.
I was very impressed and a wee bit surprised that you were so specific and issued a press release in response to the House budget resolution. Tell us why you did so and what you're concerned about, David.
Well, I think it's important that everybody, not just within Milwaukee County, but in southeastern Wisconsin, in the states and across this country, people are paying attention to what is actually happening in Congress. That's one of the reasons why I'm out here today on Capitol Hill, you know, working with many of my counterparts through the National Association of Counties Legislative Conference. And what I'm really afraid of is not being able to deliver the promises that we say that we're going to deliver when it comes down to local units of government. And so we've been here, one, representing not just Milwaukee County, but the chair of the Large Urban Counties Caucus, where we've been prioritizing and having conversations about the cuts that we don't want to see. First and foremost, I think there are many people in this community who understand that cuts to Medicaid, and particularly cuts to Medicare, are extremely crucial. We do not want to see that happening in our communities. We know how that's not only going to affect our seniors, but we know how that's going to affect our children, and not just in urban centers, but in many rural areas. And so we really want folks to, we want them to focus on the true impacts for issues that affect urban counties like Milwaukee. Like, what are we doing to increase, you know, the mental health and substance use investments? How are we investing in transportation and infrastructure, focusing on health like maternal and infant mortality, housing accessibility, things that the American people really care about. And so I'm glad to be here. But again, I'm here talking to legislators, talking to congressional members, working with my counterparts, but I am not here to hear the president speak tonight.
I can't blame you for that. I would be skipping it myself. It wasn't part of my gosh darn job every day. Just to put not too fine a point on it, Medicaid covers 1 in 5 people in the United States, including nearly half of all of our children. That is 1 in 2 children receive health benefits and supports in some way through Medicaid, including as well over 8 million seniors. In Wisconsin, more than 1.2 million people are enrolled in Medicaid, including well over 60% of senior citizens that are in residential nursing home facilities. These cuts would be devastating across the state of Wisconsin. David, what have you been hearing from folks across the country, other county leaders, both urban and rural counties, at the National Counties Association Legislative Caucus meetings? And what are you hearing from Wisconsinites and Milwaukeeans about these proposed cuts?
Well, what I can tell you is that being out here is a great opportunity. You meet different people from different states that have different issues than you. And I have to tell you about a conversation that I actually had last night, right? I met a guy from rural Minnesota who happens to be a huge Trump supporter. And when we were having the conversation about what is happening in the federal government and how we're feeling the squeeze, particularly at the local level within counties, one of the things that he kept talking about was the fact that these Medicare and Medicaid cuts will be extremely impactful on their community. They have a community of about 18,000, right? But majority of their population are seniors and they're living in long-term care facilities. And so for them, they're wondering, how are we going to pay these bills? How are we going to be able to take care of our entire population if he's going to be making, you know, these types of cuts to the Medicare and Medicaid program? And so not only am I hearing that from rural places and, you know, from our rural members within the National Association of Counties, but even back at home, there are many people. When we think about the children that are going to be affected by these cuts, should alarm every single one of us. I think many people forget that close to about 40% of the people who are on Medicaid are children. Right. Or yeah. Medicare. These are children. Right. We are literally we're having a conversation about removing healthcare access, healthcare services from our youngest and most vulnerable population right here in our own community. And we just, quite frankly, we can't have that. But I do think this is an opportunity, right? An opportunity for many of your listeners, everyone in our community, to start standing up and making sure to speak out. And so I want to encourage everyone, right? You know, you can make phone calls, but many of those voicemails are now full. And they may not even be checking the voicemails because they don't want to talk to you. So let's make sure that we're sending an email. Let's make sure that we're utilizing social media. And when you send that email, right, make sure that you're even talking to the people who are on your side. Have them copying on these emails so we can have a paper trail to everyone who's receiving these so we understand how to bring the level of accountability that's needed in order to stop these cuts.
David, if I may ask, would you want either your campaign or Milwaukee County copied on those emails? And if so, what email address should folks put in their CC lines as they reach out to Congressman Van Orten, Style, Fitzgerald, Grothman, and Weed here in the Wisconsin delegation?
Absolutely. You can definitely email us. Our email is countyexec@milwaukeecountywi.gov. But I will say we have great champions in Senator Tammy Baldwin, Congresswoman Mark Pocan, as well as Congresswoman Gwen Moore. And you should be copying them as well on that email so they can have a trail and be able to bring that to their colleagues.
Folks, we'll put all of those emails for Senator Tammy Baldwin, Congresswoman Gwen Moore, Congressman Mark Pocan, as well as the email that Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley just mentioned. County Executive, we're on day two of pretty significant losses in the market with Donald Trump's announcement that he is going to be moving forward with crippling tariffs that are going to hurt farmers in Wisconsin, costing them billions in revenues, tariffs applying to China, Canada, and Mexico. As people look forward, Donald Trump admittedly and self-proclaiming that he was elected based on grocery prices. What should Wisconsinites be thinking about next as we enter this phase of a trade war with some of our largest trading partners, both in this hemisphere and with China?
Well, one, all of us should be extremely concerned about what is happening right now. Not only will this raise prices for many businesses in our community, but this is going to raise prices on consumers. And we can see an immediate effect because I think many people may not know right here in the state of Wisconsin, we rely on a lot of energy coming from Canada, right? When we think about the gas that we're putting into our cars every single day, you know, that crude oil is coming from Canada. So this is going to affect our pocketbooks. And so we're going to see these increases. But this is why we need people to get involved, right? I know we are elected officials, and I'm letting folks, I want folks to understand that we are fighting every single day to make sure that our representatives right here in Congress understand what these impacts are going to be. And this is also going to, you know, stifle our ability when it comes down to local units of government to really, you know, take hold and really continue to invest in those safety net programs, because we won't be able to invest in those programs due to the rising costs, right? We're seeing inflation. We're seeing the rise in all of these prices. And look, Donald Trump doesn't care about anybody but his damn self. I'm just saying it like it is. And so until we get our congressional members to do the right thing, to stand up, particularly in the Republican Party, stand up to the mess that we're seeing, it's going to be very difficult for us to be able to dig ourselves out of this hole. And so I want the people to understand that we all have a role to play when it comes down to stopping the bad things that's happening within the federal government. And so let's make sure that we do everything that we can. But right now, you know, we're talking to our state members as well. And thank God for Governor Tony Evers trying to think ahead as far as what investments we need to make in this 2025-2027 budget. Because he's thinking about how these cuts are going to affect everybody across the entire state of Wisconsin. And so you should be also calling your representative, your state senator, and letting them know how you support this particular budget and how we need to move forward in general and standing up, quite frankly, to dictatorship right here in our country.
Folks, that's Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley talking about all of the potential impacts, not just on Milwaukee County residents, but across the state of Wisconsin, as the confluence, as the intersection of these middle class crushing policy decisions by the Trump administration begin to come down the pike? That's the next question I wanted to ask you, David. We've talked about the House budget resolution and how it proposes absolutely life-threatening cuts to both Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, food assistance that feeds so many of our families here in the state of Wisconsin. The intersection of those cuts, the proposed cuts that are coming to Social Security and Medicare as well, the intersection of that with this trade war with Canada, Mexico, and China, I can't imagine. It's like we're walking right into the Bermuda Triangle of middle class badness. I can't imagine an agenda that is more anti-working person, anti-merit, anti-middle class than what we've got now. How should individuals, in addition to reaching out to their elected officials, are there tips or thinking that you have about how people should be preparing for this grave period of uncertainty and potential economic hardship?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, one, I don't want folks to, you know, run out and go to the grocery store right now trying to stock up on tissue and all these different things.
Don't do that.
Yeah, we don't need that, right? But again, I think right now it's really about, one, we have to create our own networks, right? And I think this is really going to, you know, kind of force people to, one, get to know your neighbors a little bit more, right? Understanding who lives in your neighborhood, what are the needs that people may have? So because we're going to have to lean on one another, right? And so many people may not be able to afford that milk or those eggs. And so how are we working as a community to make sure that we're leaning on one another to get through this, quite frankly, this uncertain period of time in our lives? And this is something that we haven't quite seen before, because usually there's an end goal. Right. Yeah. There's no end goal when it comes down to this. We are just seeing someone who is making erratic decisions because they feel like they need to be a bully to Canada and Mexico, to be quite frank. But these are our neighbors. And one, we need to make sure that we're embracing one another locally, but also across the entire state of Wisconsin. These cuts are not going to just affect one county, one city, one town, or one municipality. It's going to affect all of us. And so we're going to have some conversations about what we need to do at the state level. Again, leaning on our state government, leaning on Governor Evers and our legislators to do the right thing and making sure to repair the harm that we see coming down this pipeline.
Prepare and repair. Words from Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. I really want to elevate and lift up, David, your affirmation that we need to be looking out for one another, our neighbors, our colleagues. How are people doing? Look, if you have an extra couple of shekels, if you have a little bit of extra time, some donations, looking out for those who may find themselves in food insecurity or housing insecurity, to get involved with our election process. And of course, to be sure that you are registered and ready to vote, get your voting done before April 1st. And if you can't do that, make a plan to vote on April 1st. Bring a buddy, bring a friend, bring a family member, but let's get it done, Wisconsin, on April 1st. David, I just want to say to you, my most heartfelt thanks for all of your work on behalf of Milwaukee County at the National Counties Association Legislative Conference this week. And please, to all of my former colleagues and friends at Milwaukee County, give them my best. Tell them to keep up the good fight. We're all counting on them. Folks, it's
absolutely
been my big pleasure to talk with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. Also, a good quotable this afternoon: Donald Trump just looking out for his damn self. Hear, hear, David. It's always good to talk to you. Folks, when we come back, I'll give you my final thoughts on this very busy Tuesday of news as we look to a Bermuda Triangle that's coming for the middle class here in this country. Keep it locked. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You've got some thoughts? I want to hear them. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support WISS, the Valley's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Folks, I'm talking with Jill Rosenthal. Trump is proposing to make incredibly drastic cuts to the NIH.
The National Institutes of Health, the state receives almost $600 million. That pays for over 7,000 jobs in Wisconsin and accounted for almost $1.5 billion in economic activity in 1 year.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
I'm very excited. It is my pleasure to welcome tonight my old pal, Dr. Kristen Lierley. I told the entire listening audience that I rub my feet together sometime when I watch TV, and I called it self-cuddling. And it's like the only thing we do where we rub our own bodies when we relax, you know.
Is it? Are you telling that to a gynecologist? Pete, come on.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
At National Geographic Society, we believe in the power of wonder. It drives us to explore, pushes us to see the world differently, moves us to action. And we believe that today, wonder is more essential than ever.
Wow.
That's why we're supporting a new generation of explorers to ask big questions, make breakthroughs, and bring the future closer. Wonder awaits. Will you join us? Visit natgeo.org/wonder.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
From Oshkosh to Nina, this is 98.3 WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, everybody. We are indeed going to have to ride the storm out. The Bermuda Triangle coming for the middle class here in Wisconsin. I think many of us are about to be crushed by Donald Trump's misguided, self-interested policy proposals. Let me explain, and then we're going to go to the phone lines. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Here are the three pieces of the Bermuda Triangle that Donald Trump has whipped up that are going to, I think, crush the middle class and working folks in this country. The first is, of course, a trade war with China, Canada, and Mexico. He's signed on to it. It's official. This is going to make housing more expensive. It's going to devastate agriculture. It's going to drive up prices at the gas pumps. Remember those little stickers that they put on with Joe Biden pointing, saying, I did this. We're about to have that happen here. The second stool. And Kelvin, am I getting a little static here? Because I'm going to pop out and come back in. Here we do, folks.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. We've had a great show today. We talked to Jeff Mandel from Law Forward. He had a lot to say about Brad Schimmel running for the Supreme Court race. I really suggest you go and check that out. It is the first half hour of this hour, and Maggie is back.
Hey, Kelvin and everybody. Yes, at least once a show, we got a little fuzz on it. I was explaining the Bermuda Triangle that's coming for the middle class. The first is the trade war. It's going to make everything more expensive. And those costs will be passed on to you. It's going to create inflationary pressures. When we did this the first time, when Trump did this in his first administration, and by the way, he had to take over $26 billion of your tax dollars to shore up agriculture in the form of direct payments to farmers after their businesses were devastated because China basically stopped importing agricultural products from the United States. When this happened the first time, we were in a very low inflationary environment. We're not there now. So not only is the trade war going to make everything more expensive, it's going to drive up inflation. So hold your horses. You think housing is expensive now? Just wait. It's going to get worse. Leg number two of the Bermuda Triangle coming to you and for you, courtesy of Donald Trump, is this attack on government benefits that people have earned, like Social Security, veterans benefits, Medicaid, Medicare, food assistance programs. This coupled on the second leg with this unbelievable dismantling of the federal government. Now, listen, I will always advocate so strongly for doing everything that we should to curb fraud, waste, and abuse, to audit and improve government, and in some places, maybe reimagine government, to do things entirely different, to make sure it is efficient and effective for the middle class. But willy-nilly cuts made by a bunch of pimply, barely out of pubescence technocrats who have never worked in government before, who are in their early 20s, all orchestrated by a billionaire overlord, ain't the way to get there, folks. And the third leg of the stool is the rank corruption. Money in politics is bad. I hate it when Democrats take it, when Republicans take it. But you know what's worse? Unelected billionaires deciding how our federal government's going to be run. You know what's worse? A president issuing his own cryptocurrency and accepting $200 billion in purchases and acting like it's not some sort of violation of self-dealing. All of this is so, so very bad. And when you look at the corruption in light of what they are going to fund with all of these benefit cuts and so-called efficiency measures, which is simply tax cuts for billionaires and the wealthiest corporations, doesn't have to be this way. I'm all for smarter, better, more effective government. And I'm going to tell you this, it ain't what Trump's doing. And just because he says it is, doesn't make it so. Let's go to the phones. Ollie from the Northwoods, you're up next here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Go ahead.
Well, to go along with what David Crowley just was talking about, yesterday I had contacted Governor Evers' office and proposed a plan that I call We Care Wisconsin, Empathy in Action, and just said that the government could help the farmers, and private groups could help finance farmers in exchange for farmers hiring federal workers, and farmers could also donate a portion of their unsold produce because of the tariffs. They could donate some of that to school lunch programs, and then also take some students onto their farms and teach them the importance of farming and growing their own food.
Ollie, I love these ideas, and I think this is right in the exact lane that we should be thinking. How can we work together to support our farmers, our neighbors, our young people, especially as we're being told by Donald Trump and the MAGAs that government isn't in the business of making sure everybody's okay anymore. Government ain't in the business of supporting the middle class and working people. It's in the business of tax cuts for billionaires and the wealthiest corporations. And, you know, maybe 20-aught billion in contracts for the billionaire overlord, Elon Musk. No self-dealing here. Nothing to see here, folks. Oy vey. We'll be back tomorrow. I've got Senator Hasselbein for broad appeal at 3 p.m. Don't miss that. My name's Maggie Dawn. You've been listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a couple of guest hosts in for Dom Salvia up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together. Take care. You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for the Maggie Dawn Show.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I talk a little show business with Chris Foran from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Rich LoCascio from Civic Media's WRJN drops by to talk pro wrestling. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding, just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is WISS Berlin-Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein-Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
A special report from ABC News. I'm Dave Packer. President Trump Tuesday evening delivering a speech to a joint session of Congress.
The days of rule by unelected bureaucrats are over.
It got contentious.
This might be what these types of addresses look like, at least for the next 4 years with Donald Trump in office. It was striking to see a lack of decorum throughout the night, right away when Congressman Al Green of Texas was standing up, yelling at the president, shaking his cane. And repeatedly, the House Speaker Mike Johnson was saying there has to be decorum here. We have to maintain decorum. And ultimately, the congressman was escorted out of the chamber.
ABC's Karen Travers. Senator Alyssa Slotkin from Michigan gave the Democratic response.
America wants change, but there's a responsible way to make change and a reckless way. And we can make that change without forgetting who we are as a country and as a democracy.
This is ABC News.